You are listening to the weekly podcast of Journey Christian Church, located on 441, 1 mile north of Maitland Boulevard, 1965 South Orange Blossom Trail in Apopka, Florida. Our website, journeychristian.com. This weekend, lead pastor John Hampton will continue with our series called Stepping Out of the Shadow. Today, we will be talking about the effects of our shadows on our lives. This time, we will dive into the statement that everybody was made for a reason. Everybody has a shadow mission. We will be looking at the life of Esther for a deeper understanding of this. Our scripture text comes from Esther chapter 1, starting in verse 1. Today's message is entitled Shadow Mission Control, Part 1, The King.
We've been in a series called Stepping Out of the Shadow, which basically is about dealing with your past and breaking free from the power of our past. And let me just say this to us. If this is your first time to join us in this series, thank you for coming. We're really glad to have you with us, whether in person or live stream. And I would say it would be helpful for you to go back and watch or listen to some of the prior messages in this series. You can do that at journeychristian.com. You can do that through our Journey Christian app. I think that will help you understand kind of the purpose and direction of this series called Stepping Out of the Shadows. So this weekend, and for the next 3 weeks, we're making a slight shift in our focus. Now, we're still talking about the effects of our shadow, but we're going to look at a particular aspect of our shadow that has some far-reaching implications. And to set this up, I need you to help me right now. I'm going to ask you a question. How many of you would agree with this statement that everybody was made for a reason, everybody was made for a purpose? Raise your hand if you agree with that. You agree with that? Yeah, most of us are on board with that. Most of us are on board with that. We believe there is a purpose for our individual lives, but not only for our individual lives, but for the organizations that we are a part of, like businesses and like schools and churches. All those things have a mission too, and you know, if you are part of an organization, that leaders love to think about mission and cast vision for the mission and strategize about how to fulfill the mission and measure whether or not we're achieving the mission and celebrate the wins of the mission. We can all get on board with the idea that we're made for a mission, but what if we miss it? What if we don't embrace that sense of purpose? What if we somehow miss the reason for which we exist and pursue the wrong mission? What happens then? Then we will begin to live for what one writer calls the shadow mission. Everybody say that with me right now. Shadow mission. So what are we talking about, a shadow mission? Patterns of thought and action based on temptations and selfish inclinations that lead us to betray our deepest values. Let me say that again. That's kind of a deep thought. It's patterns of thought and action based on temptations and selfish inclinations that lead us to betray our deepest values. We were made for a mission, but without authentic mission, our lives and the lives of the groups we're a part of will tend to drift in default mode, and they will drift into the pursuit of something unworthy, something lesser, and perhaps something dark. This past week, not making this up, about a 33-year-old computer programmer from Texas, his name is Rafael Antonio Lozano, he is on quest to visit every company-owned Starbucks on the planet. That is his mission in life. He began this quest in 1997. There were 1,304 such stores worldwide. Today, there's over 6,000 Starbucks in 37 countries. As of a few years ago, he had visited 4,918 Starbucks in North America, in addition to the 213 others he had been to around the globe. Despite his impressive pace, Lozano's realistic about the nature of his quest, saying, as long as they keep building Starbucks, I'll never be finished. He's also realistic about the importance of his mission. Listen to what he said. Every time I reach a Starbucks, I feel like I've accomplished something when I've actually accomplished nothing. Well, at least he's honest about it, right? He's aware. I know a man in Cincinnati. I personally know this guy. He has made it his goal to ride the beast. The beast is a roller coaster, at Kings Island Amusement Park outside of Cincinnati, Ohio. Yes, they have amusement parks in Ohio. He has made it his goal to ride this roller coaster more than anyone else. You know how many times he's ridden this? This was 3 years ago. He's ridden this roller coaster over 12,000 times now. Can you imagine riding a roller coaster 12,000 times? You see, we were made for a mission, but a shadow mission will lead us to settle for something substantially less, something trivial, maybe even something silly, but we're successful at being silly. But you miss out on significance. To help us unpack this, we're going to start a three-week journey through one of the most amazing stories in the Bible. It is the book of Esther. I've taught on the book of Esther before, but not like we're going to do over these next 3 weeks. I agree with writer John Ortberg, who wrote a little book on this topic that is the source of much of the content for these messages over the next few weeks. And Ortberg said this, "The book of Esther is, among other things, an epic story of missions, shadow missions, and how they're woven together into the great mission of God. Each character in the story has a choice between a mission and a shadow mission, and as they choose, destinies get formed, and our world is changed." So we're going to take a look at each of the main characters in the book of Esther, starting today with the king. So let me give you a little bit of background on the book as we dive into it. The book of Esther is set in the city of Susa, which is the capital of the ancient kingdom of Persia. Many of the people of Israel are living in exile in Persia in 470 BC, about the time the book was written, because Persia took down Babylon and Babylon took down Israel about 100 years earlier in 570 BC. So here's how the book starts. This is what happened during the time of Xerxes. The Xerxes, who ruled over 127 provinces stretching from India to the Nile. The author wants us to understand from the outset that this king, Xerxes, was a man of immense power. His kingdom extended across the known world. He's used to getting his own way. He's preoccupied with showing off his greatness. But in fact, he has no inner strength of character at all, as we will see. He constantly needs other people to make up his mind for him. His shadow mission was to look impressive and experience pleasure while following the path of least resistance. That's the shadow mission of King Xerxes. The first time we see Xerxes, he is throwing a banquet for his noblemen. There are three banquets in the first chapter of the book of Esther alone. In fact, it's been suggested one of the ways to divide up the book is to see it as a series of parties or a series of banquets. In other words, if the book of Esther were a play, each party, each banquet would be a separate act. We're told for 180 days he displayed the vast wealth of his kingdom and the splendor and glory of his majesty. Are you keeping a timeline here? That's 6 months, 180 days of serious partying. That's party number one. Then he throws a second party for the whole capital city. This one is open for the common people so that everyone from the greatest to the least will be in awe and overwhelmed by his greatness. Check out this statement. Wine was served in goblets of gold, each one different from the other, and the royal wine was abundant in keeping with the king's liberality. By the king's command, each guest was allowed to drink by the flagon. And I don't know what that means except it's unlimited booze. I don't know what that means. In other words, no restrictions. Open bar, open tab on the king. Anybody here ever see an old movie called Animal House? Yeah, you have. You just don't want to admit it, right? I want you to picture John Belushi as king of Animal House Kingdom. That's pretty much what's going on here in chapter one of the book of Esther. The first chapter is all about serving Xerxes pleasure and propping up his ego. Everybody said to him, "Xerxes, you the man." He never said back, "No, you the man." He said, "That's right, I'm the man. I'm the man. I'm the man. Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Yes." I guess you never heard that song, did you? Okay, we'll move on. His true mission should have been to be a good king, to do justice, to serve the poor, to protect the vulnerable, to care for the orphan. In other words, he should have been about creating a flourishing society. But his shadow mission is the difference between the king he should have been and the king that he was. There's a haunting poem is written by a poet and author named T.S. Eliot. It was written in the time of great despair in Eliot's life. He's one of the famous poets and writers of the early 20th century. 1925, Eliot wrote a poem called The Hollow Men. Among what he wrote are these words: "We are the hollow men in the twilight kingdom. This is the dead land. Between the idea and the reality falls the shadow. Between the essence and the descent falls the shadow." Eliot, poetically and with deep melancholy, says that somewhere between the man I am and the man I could be, in between the world as it is and the world as it ought to be, falls the shadow. And the poem concludes with these famous words: "This is the way the world ends, not with a bang, but with a whimper." In other words, Eliot was saying chasing shadow missions leads to hollow men and hollow women. Back to Esther. There's a third banquet that we're told about in the first chapter, And this one is just for the women, and it's thrown by Xerxes' queen, who's a woman named Vashti or Vashti. At the queen's party, we're not told of excesses or juvenile behavior. The contrast between the king and the queen in terms of their maturity is stark and noted. Here's what it says: "On the seventh day, when the king was merry with wine, he sent for Queen Vashti. He'd been showing off all of his possessions to all the people, and he wanted to show them his ultimate possession, which was his queen." Now, let me ask you, what do you think he wanted to show them about the queen? Her high IQ? Her charming personality? Do you think he wanted her to come and lead a discussion of the global economic impact of Persian trade policies? Or to lead a lively discussion of the decline of the Babylonian Empire? I don't think so. He commanded his attendants to bring Queen Vashti in order to show the peoples and the officials her beauty, for she was fair to behold. Ladies, you know to this day that one of the ways the image of God in women is often devalued is by the message: who you are is how you look. So imagine being in Queen Vashti's position. Imagine how humiliating this could be for her. And then comes an extraordinary moment recorded in the annals of kings and queens. And this is a point that we need to think more about if we had more time. But let me just say this: without this moment, the rest of the book, the heroism of Esther, would never take place. This never happens without this. But when the attendants delivered the king's command, Queen Vashti refused to come. How about that? Somebody said no to this self-indulgent, self-aggrandizing king, and it was none other than his wife. She basically said, "Come parade myself before a crazed mob after 7 days of Miller time?" I don't think so. "Thanks for the invitation, King Honey, but I think I'd rather stay home and wash my royal hair." It's amazing what happens when somebody, it's Vashti here in the first chapter, could be you in your story, believes they have a choice to do the right thing if they just have enough courage to do the right thing. And I just have to point out, it's very striking in the Bible that in this ancient book about a pagan system which insisted that male dominance must be enforced, the first hero in the story is a wife who refuses to submit to her husband's humiliating and selfish agenda. Now, how do you think this king, King Xerxes, how do you think this went over with him? How do you think he responds to this? Do you think he said, "Oh, Vashti, darling, you're so right. That was such an awkward and unfair request of you. I don't know what I was thinking, but you know how I get when my heart gets merry with wine. I'm sorry I brought it up. Forgive me, dear." You think that's what he said? I don't think so. Then when Vashti said no, the king became furious and burned with anger, and out comes Xerxes' shadow. You see, Vashti made him look weak. She was threatening his shadow mission of power projection and impressing the nation, and he cannot stand for that. Now, there is a ton of irony in the book of Esther. Here is one piece of irony. The king consulted the sages who knew the law. The book of Esther, the writer of the book, with great skill and satire and some exaggeration, wants us to understand that the most powerful guy in the world couldn't control his wife, couldn't get her to cooperate. So what does he do? He turns to the Persian version of the Supreme Court. He makes this domestic dispute a matter of state. And he says, basically, what am I going to do with my wife? If the word gets out, I can't control my wife, all the wives of all the husbands and all of Persia is going to get out of hand. So the sages, these are the really smart guys who know the law, tell him to issue a royal order that basically says this: Queen Vashti is not to be allowed to come before the king anymore. Really? That's what the sages have to say? That's her punishment? You don't want to come before the king when the king calls for you? We'll show you. We forbid you to come before the king. That'll teach her. Let's not let her do what she wasn't going to do anyway. It's like the employee says, you fired me, I'll show you, I quit. So the boyfriend says, you breaking up with me, I'll break up with you first. This is the best and highest wisdom the highest court in Persia had to offer, but he gets better. It's not all they said. Then when the king's edict is proclaimed throughout the vast and magnificent realm, all the women will respect their husbands from the least to the greatest. You think that happened? Yeah, right. As a side note, one writer points out every marriage has a shadow mission. Have you thought about this? Now, if you're married and you're listening to this, or you're here in the room right now, if you're married, think about this. Every marriage has a shadow mission. And every relationship, every significant friendship has a shadow mission. Part of the God-given mission of a healthy relationship is that two people help each other become a better person. Marriage is one of God's greatest tools for spiritual formation because that person I'm married to sees me and my flaws more clearly and more close up than anybody else in the world. The God-given mission of marriage will mean love and encouragement, but listen, it will also mean conflict and confrontation and truth-telling. Xerxes did not want that from his queen. He wanted a compliant, subservient, attractive junior assistant who would make him feel like he was a powerful man. And I would say to you, if you're married, you might think about your marriage or any key relationship in your life, and you should ask, what's our shadow mission? All relationships have them. For many of us, the shadow mission in our marriage is to project an impressive image of an enviable relationship. For some of us, it might be conflict avoidance. For some of us, it might be it's not my fault, or some pseudo-intimacy that we pursue, or propping up one of the partner's fragile egos, or having kids that make us look successful, or partnering in the pursuit of a materialistic lifestyle, or reinforcing some smug satisfaction of success, or enabling alcoholism or another debilitating addiction. It could be placating one of the partner's anger or covering physical abuse. It could be just co-rationalizing our refusal to be completely devoted to God. But I want to challenge you this week, as part of this series, have a talk with your spouse. Or if you're single, have a talk with a really good friend and ask them this, if you dare: what's the shadow mission of our relationship? How do you see it? Ask them. If you have the courage, say, I really want to know. Xerxes doesn't want that kind of honest relationship. He wants his ego stroked. And Vashti, his queen, at least on this occasion, refuses to play along. But his advisors will. You see, part of what's going on here, the writer is showing us that these guys around him are flatterers, his advisors. They talk about this edict being spread throughout the king's realm and how vast and magnificent this realm is. They know his shadow mission is ego, appearance, and pleasure. They all know that, but they won't name it to him. The king has surrounded himself, and I want to say this to you, this is a real danger for anyone who exercises power over others. He surrounded himself with people who will reinforce his shadow mission. By the way, in your work, in your volunteering, in your ministry, the higher up you go in the organization, the less truth you're likely to hear about the organization and about you. One of the signs that a shadow mission has taken root is when people underneath the leader become more concerned about the leader's perception of reality than they are about reality itself. Because then the shadow mission of the community or the organization or whatever it is to placate the leader. Now, I want to say this something. If you're a leader, listen. I will guarantee you, if you're leading something and you don't know what your shadow mission is, you're the only one in your circle who doesn't know what it is. Because those that you're leading sniff that out a long time ago. It's just not in their best interest to tell you. Andy Stanley says this, leaders who don't listen to others will eventually be surrounded by people who have nothing to say. Leaders who refuse to listen to others will eventually be surrounded by people who have nothing to say. I want to pause at this point in the story. I want to ask a couple of really personal questions. We need to wrestle with these. What's your shadow mission? What's your shadow mission? In the beginning of creation, God gave human beings a mission. This is so central to us and our humanity. God created human beings in his image to reflect his nature, and God blessed them and said, prosper and reproduce and fill the earth, take charge. Be responsible for every living thing that moves on the face of the earth. And you do realize that's the first mission statement in history. It's part of why I think we love mission statements. On the same day, God gave people life. God gave people a mission. We were made to make a difference. It's hardwired into human DNA. That's why we love great causes. That's why we love to have a purpose. Our original God-given mission is to care for all that God has created and to cultivate it so that human life and all things might flourish as we work together with God under his authority. But then the shadow mission comes. And the shadow mission from the evil one was this. You can't trust him. You should disobey God. He's holding out on you. You should eat that fruit. He basically says to the woman, exalt your own ego and you'll be like God. Listen, our mission is to serve God. Our shadow mission is to supplant God. Our mission is to cooperate with God. Our shadow mission is to contradict God. Our mission is to allow the created world to flourish. Our shadow mission is to alienate the created world to flounder. I've been in different groups and settings where people talk about developing a personal mission statement. Now, some of you here and some of you watching, you're really dialed in on that. You've got it written down somewhere. You understand what your personal mission statement is, but I just want to be honest with you for the next few moments here. I've wrestled with that a little bit personally. I know other people that wrestle with that too. And here's what we're going to do. Next week, we're going to talk more about how do you discern your mission with God for this season in your life. How do you discern that? We're going to talk about that more next week. I may struggle articulating my mission, but I'm pretty sure I can tell you what my shadow mission is. It revealed itself at a staff retreat several years ago in Ohio. We were doing a group exercise one evening where we were supposed to whisper a lie that we believe about ourselves that we've allowed to shape us. And my lie that I whispered to the ears of several people in a circle was this: you're going to embarrass everybody. And of course, everybody includes me. And consequently, what people think about me and say about me have always mattered to me way more than it should. That can make me crave recognition and validation from others in unhealthy ways and seek significance based on my performance. I tend to overreact when people are critical of me, and I seek to shut people down who disagree with me by talking faster, louder, or more passionately. In short, my shadow mission is to seek significance and notoriety by always keeping up a strong and charming appearance. I know apart from God's grace, I will make my life about winning approval and wanting applause. and I will be one of the hollow men that Eliot wrote about. And friends, I have felt that hollowness. It's a battle I fight every day and will the rest of my life. So now that we got that out of the way, what's your problem? Seriously, I'm asking you to have the courage to name your shadow mission. I'll give you just a few to maybe get you started. See if one of these helps or connects to you. Here's a few examples. I don't care who's in charge as long as it's me. Show me the money. Busy, busy, busy. I'm just busy. I need to be needed. Will you need me? Hey, just stop right there. Just a moment. I have to tell you this. This bonus material for you. Nobody else gets this, okay? So last night, my 2-year-old grandson is in the worship service with my oldest daughter. And when I said this, that I need to be needed, will you need me? My little grandson out loud said, yes. My grandson needs me. I don't care what y'all think about me. My grandson needs me. That's awesome. Here we go. Here's another shadow. Perfect house, perfect marriage, perfect kids, perfect hair, perfect abs, perfect dog. Climbing ladders by climbing over people. You know what? Using this lens of a shadow mission, we can quickly see the Bible is full of characters who were tempted by a shadow mission. For example, think about this. Let's just do a few. King Solomon. What's his shadow mission? Pleasure. For Jonah, escape. For many of the Pharisees in Jesus' day, we're better than you. We're more holy than you. For Pilate, let's avoid responsibility. For a little-known character named Simon the Sorcerer, we read about in Acts chapter 8, his shadow mission was actually having a spectacular ministry that impresses others. You see, listen, part of what makes a shadow mission so tempting is it's usually closely related to our gifts, our passions, and our callings. It's not like our shadow mission is 180 degrees opposite from the way you're wired. It would be easy to say no to that. A shadow mission takes the desires and your abilities and your longings and just seeks to twist them a few degrees, just to get a few degrees off track. Every shadow mission is almost always a slight variation of our authentic mission. Pete Cesaro, in his wonderful book, Emotionally Healthy Leader, gives a list of what happens when we live out of our shadow mission. He says, if you have gifts in speaking and mobilizing people, that's a good thing. The shadow side of these gifts is the insatiable need for affirmation. We value excellence. That's good. The shadow side emerges when the pursuit of excellence crosses into perfectionism that allows no margin for mistakes and makes others miserable as they try to measure up. We're zealous for God's truth and right doctrine. That's good. The shadow emerges when our zeal prevents us from loving others who disagree with us. We love to serve. That's good. The shadow reveals itself when we hide ourselves in the kitchen at social events instead of talking to people as a way of protecting ourselves from letting others get too close or potentially hurting us. So what's your shadow mission? Here's another question. What's the shadow mission of your family or your work or your department or your organization or ministry you're involved with? I heard about one church in an affluent and prestigious area outside of San Francisco, and they boldly said that they believe the shadow mission of their church could be stated like this: a successful church for successful people. Imagine that being on the sign outside. Successful church for successful people. Every church has a mission statement probably somewhere on the wall, but your shadow mission is often what's taking place down the halls. Here's a few I've ran across over the years with church in mind. Let's just get this over and go home. We're better than you. Don't ask questions. Bigger is better. Real Christians don't have problems. Yeah, we can laugh at that one, right? Bible knowledge equals maturity. Keep them busy. Busy, busy. Authenticity is dangerous. Majority rules. What if houses had, not just churches, well, what if houses had signs out in front of them? What if apartments had banners that had the shadow mission of the person of their family living inside, successfully avoiding conflict for 22 years, passing judgment, feeling smug, pressuring overachieving little kids into early ulcers? You know, I think about my dad a lot lately. I always thought about my dad a lot, but especially since he's dead now. I never had a conversation with my dad about his shadow mission. My dad probably never heard that term in his life. But I know he wrestled with it, because we all do. My dad came from a family of undereducated, underpaid, hardworking, hard-drinking people who sought to escape drudgery in their life either through the bottle or the Bible. My dad could have become an alcoholic like many of the men in his family were, but he didn't. Now, let me say, in large part because of my mom, who was another example of a strong woman that didn't always submit to her husband's agenda. But my dad still had a choice, and he chose to sacrifice and pray and devote his time and energy to model and teach in his own way and to love his family and his church and his community. And I want to say this, for every dad or mom who has said no to whatever shadow mission might tempt you in order for you to say yes to God and your family, I want you to know you're a hero. You're a hero. And for every dad and for every mom or for anybody else who feels like you've fallen short and you've given into your shadow mission and you're wrestling with it right now and you don't know if you have enough strength, you don't know if you really believe God has something better for you, I want to tell you some good news. Can I tell you some good news? Jesus knows all about shadow missions because he had one too. What was Jesus' shadow mission? To be Messiah without suffering. To be Messiah without suffering. There's a great New Testament scholar named F.F. Bruce, and this is what he writes. Time and time again, the temptation came to Jesus from many directions to choose some less costly way of fulfilling that calling than the way of suffering and death. But he resisted it to the end. In other words, Jesus resisted the shadow mission. At the very beginning of his ministry, we're told, in the desert, Satan comes to him and tempts Jesus to achieve his mission without going hungry, turn these stones into bread to be spectacular, or to achieve his mission without pain, throw yourself down from the temple and the angels will catch you, you won't even hurt yourself, or to achieve his mission without opposition, you bow down before me now and I'm going to give you all the kingdoms of the earth. Jesus said, no, 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 I choose the path the Father has set before me. Later on, Jesus tells his disciples one day, he says, I'm going to suffer and I'm going to die. And Peter, one of his chief guys, takes him aside and says, no, suffering is unnecessary. That's exactly the same shadow mission Satan spoke to him about. And that's why Jesus rebuked Peter so sharply. He didn't say, get behind me, Peter. What did he say? Get behind me, Satan, because he recognized the voice. I believe this shadow tempted Jesus all the way to the Garden of Gethsemane. And he has one final wrestling match with his shadow mission. And so he says, Father, if it's possible, let this cup, and the cup is the imagery of the wrath of God, the suffering of the anger of God in some way we don't fully understand and never will over all human sin. Let this cup pass from me, his shadow mission, be Messiah without the cross, without suffering. But he said no to the shadow and he went to the cross. But even when he was hanging on the cross, people below him are mocking and taunting him. Same temptation. He saved others. Can't save himself. Why don't you come down from the cross if you're Messiah? But Jesus stares the shadow in the face, and on the cross he died for all the hollow men and all the hollow women. When he was crucified, have you thought of this? When he was crucified, we're told from noon until 3 p.m, darkness came over the whole land. It's almost as if God is using the earth to paint a picture that in between the incarnation and the resurrection falls the shadow. In between the love of God and the sins of the whole world falls the shadow. In between me and you, broken, messed up, sin-loving people, and our holy God, our heavenly Father, falls the shadow. And on the cross, the shadow died so we could be reborn, so that we could know life. Did you know 2 years after T.S. Eliot wrote that poem, The Hollow Men, he experienced a remarkable conversion to Jesus Christ? T.S. Eliot wrote that poem in 1925. In 1927, he became a follower of Christ. His poetry, which before was all about beauty and despair, now points to beauty and hope. With his new faith came a new mission. And here's how we want to conclude today. You'll never be able to avoid your shadow mission by just trying to avoid your shadow mission. It has to be replaced by something better, by something more noble, by something more compelling. The mission that God has for you, we're made to discover and devote ourselves to that mission. How do we do that? Back to the story. After Xerxes sobers up and cools off, he realizes he didn't have a queen anymore. And so, true to his nature, he gets some advice on how to find a new queen. Ladies, let me just say this. You will not believe how he goes about this. Actually, when you realize this is a group of enabling, indulgent, flatter the king at any cost advisors, ladies, you'll probably say, that's exactly what I think this bunch would come up with. His choice ends up being a young woman named Esther. She's beautiful, she's gracious, she's well-liked, she's Jewish, meaning she's part of the covenant people of God. Now remember, the Jews are living in exile. They've lost their land. It looks to all of them like their mission to build a flourishing nation in their land, to be the light of the world, is stalled or over. Well, Esther, in exile, gets to be queen of the most powerful, pervasive empire of her day, and her mission appears to be quite clear. It's to submit to Xerxes, unlike his former queen Vashti, to make him look great, to wear fabulous clothes, and to be famous and to be loved. So Esther becomes the new queen of Persia, and she and King Xerxes live happily ever after, right? I don't think so. Disaster is coming, and Esther is going to have to look at her own shadow mission and her God-given mission, and Esther's going to have to choose. So if you want to know what happens next, if you want to know how do you discover your own mission for this season of life you're in right now, if you want to know what God is up to in giving you hard situations and why it is that you have difficult choices and tough obstacles, and how do you identify what God has given you so you can achieve what God is calling you to do in the difficulties you're facing, then you need to come back next week. Let's stand together right now. Would you stand with me right now? Let's stand together. So, Lord, we thank you that you've given us an opportunity to be a part of what you're doing in our world at this time. It is no accident that we are here. You have placed us here for your own purposes. And out of that grander purpose, we each have a purpose inside your story. Thank you for helping us to be able to wrestle with that. Thank you for giving us Jesus, who guides us every step of the way. Thank you for the cross. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thanks for listening to this message, Shadow Mission Control, Part 1, The King, with Lead Pastor John Hampton. For service times and more information about Journey Christian Church, please log on to our website anytime at journeychristian.com or call 407-88-GRACE. That's 407-88-GRACE. 884-7223.